Today, we hear that when Jesus sees this crowd, he goes up a mountain, and then he sits, and then he begins to teach. If you noticed, he doesn't stand over the people, he doesn't shout at them. He sits at eye level and teaches. And he doesn't just use a list of rules or threats, but it is a vision for the life God desires for us. And we call this portion of Jesus' teaching the Beatitudes. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. They go on. And for many, even outside of the church, these words are so familiar that it's easy to just breeze right past them, like some kind of nice religious wallpaper that unfortunately can just blend into the background. But they shouldn't be easy to ignore. Even in the Greek, the word Matthew uses for blessed is anything but tame. The Greek word is makarios. And the Anglican turned Orthodox theologian David Bentley Hart reminds us that makarios can mean blessed, happy, fortunate, prosperous. But he reminds us that it's not in the shallow sense that we often use those words. Originally, makarios referred to a kind of deep, divine flourishing, a life rooted in God's own joy. It's not momentary pleasure. It's not good vibes. It's something with far more staying power. It's the deep, abiding, all-encompassing happiness. Which is kind of surprising, because then Jesus goes on to attach that word to people who don't look particularly happy. The poor, the grieving, the meek, the persecuted. This is not your Instagram version of happiness. And it's a far cry from what I think most of us would think of as living your best life. So what exactly is Jesus talking about? Now here's the key. The Beatitudes are not rewards for virtuous living. I think we so often believe that if you have X virtue, you get this corresponding benefit. But that's not how they work. That's not at all what Jesus is saying. The Beatitudes are descriptions of people who are already deeply entangled with one another. And that, right there, is where their happiness comes from. Take, blessed are those who mourn. Jesus is not saying that mourning is good in and of itself, because grief is terrible. But the very fact that you mourn says something important. It means you have a relationship. You don't mourn unless you have loved. And in the ancient world, to mourn was never a solitary endeavor. As it means for our Jewish siblings today, it meant sitting Shiva. It meant neighbors bringing you food. It meant people showing up and refusing to let you disappear into your sorrow. Happy are those who mourn because even in their loss, they are held in community. And this is where Jesus' vision intersects in a striking way with contemporary science. So this week, I was listening to the podcast Science Versus. It's one of my favorites. It's nerdy, filled with facts. I highly recommend it. And Wendy Zukerman, the host, was interviewing the psychiatrist Robert Waldinger, the longtime director of the Harvard Study of Adult Development. Which, if you have not heard of this before, like I had not heard of it, This is the longest running scientific study of happiness ever conducted. For perspective, it has been running since the 1930s, almost a century of this study. And after tracking hundreds of lives across countless decades, the conclusion that they have drawn is shockingly simple. The people that are the healthiest and the happiest over the long term are not the richest or the most accomplished. They're the most connected. Good relationships, the study found, don't make us just feel better emotionally, although they do, but they actually protect our bodies. They regulate stress. They help wounds heal faster. They buffer pain. Loneliness, on the other hand, acts like a chronic stressor on the body, slowly wearing us down. In other words, happiness, at least the divine kind that Jesus is talking about, Makarios, is not something we can really achieve alone. Jesus seems to know this intuitively, and look at the Beatitudes through that lens. Blessed are the meek. Meekness isn't weakness. It's a posture that makes relationship possible. Blessed are the merciful. Mercy only exists between people. Blessed are the peacemakers. Peace is not just an internal state, it's a relational practice. Every beatitude situates us between one another. Even blessed are the poor in spirit is not about self-loathing or spiritual inadequacy. It names those who know that they are not self-sufficient. Those who cannot even pretend that they are fine on their own. Those people who know that they need others and that they need God. And then there's this one. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. Jesus is honest here. Choosing deep relationship, choosing justice and solidarity and mercy can be costly. And the unfortunate truth is that our world rarely rewards people who refuse to throw others under the bus, who reject using others for their own gain. Even here, though, the promise is not isolation. You're not alone, Jesus says. You are part of this long line of people who have loved this way before you. And this is where the Beatitudes' vision of happiness butts heads with our culture's idea. Society wants us to think that happiness comes from independence and productivity and wealth and self-optimization. But Jesus offers a radically different account. Happiness comes from belonging. It comes from allowing ourselves to be known in all of our joys and our concerns and our mess. Happiness comes from loving and being loved in return. Now, this Harvard study discovered something else worth noting. Relationships don't have to be perfect to be life-giving, but they do have to be real. Marriage and romantic relationships aren't necessary, but what is central, they found, is having somebody that you can call in the middle of the night, someone you can talk to and you can say, you will not believe what happened today. And then you feel your body just relax a little bit. The Beatitudes are not instructions for how to become worthy of God's love. They are a proclamation that God's joy already overflows wherever people cling to one another in vulnerability and mercy and hope. They tell us that the good life is not built on winning, but on weaving ourselves into the lives of others. So perhaps the question that Jesus leaves us with is not, am I happy? But it's rather, who am I connected to? Who do I sit with when I am sad? Who steadies me when I'm afraid? Who would notice if I quietly disappeared? Answers to these questions are a sign of being happy, blessed, flourishing, being alive in God. And it's not because life is easy, but it's because we are not alone.